Houthis are attacking commercial vessels in the Red Sea, disrupting major navigational routes and threatening the global economy.
The basic principle of freedom of navigation is at stake.
Houthis say they are targeting vessels bound for Israel. Does this mean that the Israeli war on Gaza is spreading in the Middle East? How is Africa going to be affected? Is the maritime security of some African countries along the Red Sea at stake? Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. We're coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Vincent McCorry in for Hedy Adams. The attack started in mid-November in the Red Sea by the Houthis, a militant group believed to be backed by Iran and operating in Yemen. U.S. and Britain retaliated. This week, the Houthi spokesman announced the Yemeni Houthi movement will expand its targets to include U.S. ships and added that the United States was on the verge of losing its maritime security. But this is a complex situation affecting not just the U.S., but global trade. The Red Sea leads to the Suez Canal that connects Africa and Asia with the Mediterranean Sea in Europe and ensures the flow of products from the east to the west. The disruption of commercial navigation routes implicates all countries. But let's take a look at who are the Houthis. Here is Reuters' Lucy Fielder.
The United States and Britain have launched strikes from the air and sea against Houthi military targets in Yemen in response to the movement's attacks on ships in the Red Sea.
The basic principle of freedom of navigation is at stake. And
the Houthi attacks have disrupted international commerce and increased shipping costs.
These attacks must stop.
It's a dramatic regional widening of the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza. So why are the Houthis attacking shipping? This was Houthi leader Abdul Malik al-Houthi.
We are more determined to continue targeting ships linked to Israel, and we will not back down from that. And our position stems from our faith. The Americans should know what that means.
The Houthis say they're showing support for the Palestinians and Hamas, the Islamist group that controls Gaza, in its war against Israel. They're part of the so-called Axis of Resistance, along with Hamas and Lebanon's Hezbollah. Anti-Israel, anti-West, and backed by Iran. The Houthis' slogan is death to America, death to Israel, curse the Jews, and victory to Islam. The Houthis have built ties with Iran, but it's not clear how deep they are. Iran denies accusations it arms and trains the Houthis.
While our side in supporting Palestine is clear, the actions taken by others should not be blamed on Iran's proxy groups. We do not have any proxy group in the area.
The Houthis deny being puppets of Iran and say they're fighting a corrupt system. Yemen experts say the Houthis' agenda is in fact mainly domestic. Who are the Houthis and how did they start? In the late 1990s, the northern Yemeni Houthi family set up a religious revival movement for the Zaydi sect of Shiite Islam. The sect once ruled Yemen, but their heartlands in the north were now poor and sidelined. Friction with the government grew and they fought guerrilla battles and a brief border conflict with Sunni Saudi Arabia. Yemen's war began in late 2014 when the Houthis seized Sana'a. Worried by the growing influence of Shiite Iran along its border, Saudi Arabia intervened at the head of a Western-backed coalition. The Houthis took control of much of the north and other big population centres, while the internationally recognised Yemeni government, backed by Riyadh, based itself in Aden. Until the past few months, Yemen enjoyed a lull, with a UN-led peace push and Saudi Arabia and the Houthis in talks to exit the war. The Houthi attacks on Israel have increased the risks of conflict for Saudi Arabia.
Our region is very complex.
This was Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan.
We need any other conflicts to erupt, and therefore we hope that we will be able to avoid any further escalations in our region.
Well, it's time now to bring our guest to weigh in on this developing situation at the Red Sea. From Johannesburg in South Africa, we're joined by Marisa Lorenzo, an independent risk analyst. Joining us from Washington, D.C., we have Vanda Felber-Brown, director of the Initiative on Non-State Armed Actors and co-director of the Africa Security Initiative at the Brookings Institution. Also with us is Hussein Ibish, a senior resident scholar at the Arab Gulf State Institute in Washington. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Now, if I may begin with you, Mr. Ibish, the Houthis, for a moment, and we kind of got that from our explainer there, had been quiet. And we're seeing this escalation now with at least over 25 attacks since November against ships plying that route. Is it all about retaliation on behalf of the Palestinians, or is there something deeper that has to do with what we know, the history of the Houthis in the region and the conflict that has existed before?
In my view, it's much deeper than that. I don't think any of the groups that claim to be acting on behalf of the Palestinians, coming purportedly to the defense of Hamas or striking against Israel on behalf of Gaza, are doing that. I think all of them have their own agendas, and the Houthis are no exception. I think the Houthis, first of all, are looking for domestic credibility. I think they've been hoping for a long time for a confrontation with the West, with the United States, with some force greater than Saudi Arabia, other than Saudi Arabia, to validate, to legitimate their hold on so much of northern Yemen. Which is, otherwise hard to justify. I mean, they seized power violently, and while almost all the people in northern Yemen are Zaydi Shiites, the Houthis represent religiously and ideologically a small faction of the population. So this helps to rationalize their power and to legitimate it. And the other thing is, they've been increasingly part of this regional Iranian alliance, and they're emerging now as a major force by attacking maritime security in the region. And sort of that really helps Iran's position that it will not, it must be part, it and its allies must be part of any regional maritime security order, or there won't be one.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ms. Felber-Brown, in terms of the United States' stance on this situation, we've seen retaliation. The U.S. says we'll come out in full force if the Houthis don't stop doing what they're doing. Given what you've heard from Mr. Ibish, do you get a sense that right here in the U.S. There is a recognition of the fact that this could be way more than just a retaliation? And what could it mean if it becomes an all-out war in that region once again?
Well, the United States certainly wants to avoid an all-out war. And Iran, as much as it supports and eggs on groups like the Houthi Hezbollah in Lebanon and pro-Iranian Shia militias in Iraq, also wants to avoid an all-out war. Certainly, neither the United States nor Iran want any kind of direct escalation, direct fighting between each other. That said, using those proxy actors, who no doubt have their own internal reasons, but who are also interacting as part of Iran's axis of resistance, carries enormous risks of escalation. So for Washington, the primary objective is to ensure the freedom of navigation, as we heard the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations state in your earlier report. That's a fundamental objective of U.S. policy, has wide security and economic implications for the entire world. Already we have seen the price of containers from Asia heading to Europe has more than doubled, significantly more than doubled since November and December. Yeah. So Washington needs to ensure freedom of navigation, but wants to avoid an all-out war.
And we'll get a little bit into actually the whole question of the cost, because as you can see in our map, definitely we'll revisit it. You know, the route across the other side around the Cape of Good Hope is quite long. It kind of ships are saved up to 10 days just going through the Suez Canal. But let's refocus again a little bit on the countries in the area around the Red Sea. And Marissa, I want to come to you. We know that there are countries there, African countries, Somalia, Djibouti, Eritrea, Sudan, of course, and Egypt, that are along the Red Sea. How will this, before we talk about the economic security-wise, how are they likely to be impacted if this was to escalate?
So yes, unfortunately, if we do look at an escalation, then we do start to see a lot more countries in Africa being impacted by this. And because of where these countries are located, they would be the first ones to be impacted. And at the moment, especially in Sudan, where we've had the war ongoing now for several months, this would really just represent greater regional instability along the upper east coast of Africa and North Africa, which is really a big concern, because to date there hasn't been any kind of solution towards securing peace in that region at all. And also, if we look at Djibouti, it is a military base for many of these major powers as well. It's got, I think, the most military bases on the African continent to foreign powers. And this as well, again, if this does spill over to a wider regional conflict, could have broader security implications and disruptions. At the moment, it's not, but it really does depend on how much longer this continues.
Now, let's go back to the old question of the shipping routes and the cost of it, Mr. Ibish. In terms of the cost, to what extent are the countries in the Middle East along the Red Sea, the Indian Ocean, are affected at the moment and could be impacted in the coming days if this does not stop?
Yeah. Enormously. The UAE is a small country, but it's a maritime country. It's a port country, and it has a major presence in the Horn of Africa. Even a country as small as that is affected. Saudi Arabia has coasts on all sides of the Arabian Peninsula that you just showed. And I think your viewers need to know that the map you just showed is remarkable, because the world has 8 major maritime choke points. 3 of them are in that map. There's the Strait of Hormuz at the mouth of the Red Sea, and then near Djibouti and Yemen, between the Horn of Africa and the Arabian Peninsula, is Bab al-Mandab Strait, which the Houthis are threatening, and then up to the Suez Canal, which links the Red Sea and the Mediterranean. Just between the Bab al-Mandab Strait and the Suez Canal in through the Red Sea is 12% of global commerce. Think of that, 12% of global commerce. This area is so strategically crucial to the world that China's only major military base outside of its immediate region is in Djibouti. And there's no mystery why that is. That's not an accident. It's because of the maritime security importance of this region. So for the countries of the region, it's crucial. And for the world, it's crucial. And that's why the United States and a large coalition of countries, which don't include any of the Red Sea littoral countries. None of them have signed on to this, but I think a lot of them, like Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and even Israel, are de facto members, is taking such a strong stance against the Houthis and saying, look, this is it. We're not putting up with piracy like this because of global commerce.
Yes. Now, Ms. Faba Brown, for those who are in the United States, you know, this may look like something so far away, but you started talking about the cost up to this point of ships rerouting to what actually you can say is the original shipping route, like way before the Suez Canal. But what implication does that have on the products that we get right here in the United States?
So we have already heard the implications for countries in the region, but this has implications for countries really around the world. So in the United States, the more expensive the cost of shipping is, the more expensive both consumer products and parts of products. at the time when the United States and the world have been dealing and suffering from global inflation already set off by Russia's egregious invasion of Ukraine. So this would be another inflationary pressure if a lot of the shipping got rerouted. And so we saw this December, the volume of shipping through the Red Sea going down by half as ships were rerouting to around South Africa. In Europe, we have seen factories slowing down and in some cases even shutting down production temporarily as they have been lacking parts because of the amounts of days that gets added, 10 days to go around South Africa. So very significant strategic implications, basic security implications, but with direct economic implications for individual citizens around the world. And as we heard from Mr. Ibish, this is a very significant global choke point, global trade choke point.
Well, thank you. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back to continue our discussion on the Houthis posing a threat to maritime security in the Red Sea. Don't go away.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Vincent McCorry in for Haiti Adams. We are talking this week about the Houthi attacks on commercial vessels in the Red Sea and how it might influence global trade and whether it is an indication that Israel's war with Hamas is spreading to the Middle East. My guests are Marisa Lorenzo, an independent risk analyst, Vanda Felber-Brown, director of the Initiative on Non-State Armed Actors at the Brookings Institution, and Hussein Ibish, a senior resident scholar at the Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington. Now, if I may come to you first, Mr. Lorenzo, we've seen that the ships now are being rerouted, going back to the original route, like we're going back in time, going through South Africa. What does that mean for the continent in terms of, the security situation, but commercially and the ability for the continent to handle ships going down the Cape of Good Hope?
Sure. So, like you said, they've now rerouted and they're going around South Africa. Now, it's unfortunate that other ports along the east coast of Africa, for example, the port of Mombasa in Kenya, or Dar es Salaam port in Tanzania, that their ports are not capable of handling increased traffic and increased volumes. Because what is happening at the moment is that the global trade routes are not, I mean, they've had to change, but they are still flowing. But unfortunately, what we've seen over the years, like, yes, the port of Mombasa has been expanded, but there's been a lot of talk about developing more port capacity along the east coast of Africa, and that hasn't happened. And that means that, you know, now shipping companies are actually now forced to come all the way down effectively to the bottom of Africa and go around. And there's not really many other options to use, because the port of Durban, which is where most of them are stopping, is still Africa's largest and most efficient port. The concerns that this raises is, yeah, the lack of investment in port capacity to, I suppose, really capitalize on this new routing. But also South Africa's ports are also struggling with heavy congestion at the moment. And then that could, again, lead to even longer lead times if this conflict goes on, and then if it continues to drag out and the Port of Durban has to be used more and more frequently.
Yeah, and of course, if we may stay with you, this just for the benefits of those who may not be following shipping routines also, it's that ships need to dock at some places to refill up and get some repairs in some cases. And so the Port of Durban has to deal with these new ships now, along with the traffic that it has been having anyway, and they are not able to stop in this other port. We're talking about Dar es Salaam, Mombasa. So someone would have thought, well, going through South Africa is a blessing in disguise. So it's not.
No, unfortunately, not at the moment, just because of the struggles that South Africa has been having with most of its infrastructure, including its port infrastructure. So, for example, at the end of last year, we started to notice a lot of empty shells and parts and nothing, you know, that's indicating a crisis, but certainly indicating that congestion is really having a very big impact. When it comes to refueling as well, I know that some global shipping companies have said that they could potentially stop off at Port Louis, which is in Mauritius, or at Walvis Bay Port, which is on the west coast of Africa in Namibia. But again, these are not ports that would be able to handle this capacity either in the same way that South Africa can. So, yeah, once again, Africa has found itself unable to really capitalize on this and able to use it to its advantage. And it would be a much shorter route, for example, to go through Kenya or to go through Tanzania, but that isn't possible at the moment. It would, there would just be so much congestion. Yeah.
What a situation. Now, Mr. Ibish, the shipping company, Maersk, said that at least up to a dozen ships now are going through the Cape of Good Hope. One may wonder, from their assessment and analysis, does this look like a preparation for long-term situation here? Or is there hope in anybody's mind that this could be just a, just a stopgap, a little situation for a short time?
No, I think there is hope because Iran's presence in Yemen is actually stronger than a lot of people think. Their commander is Abdul Reza Shalai, and they have IRGC, that is Revolutionary Guard, elite commandos and commanders on the ground in Yemen. All right. This is something that is heavily contested, but I don't think that experts really doubt it. It is true. And insofar as Iran doesn't want, as our other colleagues have said, an all-out war with the United States and vice versa, I think the Houthis will be sort of enabled to create little crises, but I think Iran ultimately will probably act as a restraining force on the Houthis, and ultimately piracy does stop when the cost is raised. So if this coalition, the United States.
Basically, also saying, of course, Iran has the influence over Houthis. It can say stop it, you know.
I believe so.
Yes,
I believe so.
Okay, we hope that happens. Miss Faber Brown, there is of course the whole issue of Israel. You know, we are talking about the whole conflict spreading out, but this is because of the Israel-Hamas war. the key here, one would see, as if that conflict ended today, that will solve the problem of shipping and the problem in the Gulf area, right?
Well, perhaps. I mean, certainly the messaging that you hear are both out of Iran and from the Houthi leadership is this narrative. This is solely because of the war in Gaza. When the war in Gaza stops, then we will stop attacking the ships. Now, at the same time, there is a much deeper agenda as part of the axis of resistance to limit and harass and potentially drive out the United States out of the Middle East. And so we see a lot of pressure in Iraq, for example, on U.S. presence as part of this larger agenda. I am not persuaded that if the war in Gaza stopped today, tomorrow, there would be no more attacks. Mm-hmm. Because of this larger issue and the Gaza war being justification, pretext, a narrative to cloak another agenda in. Mm-hmm. But I want to get into very quickly into one dimension that we haven't raised, which is the enormous cost for the people in Yemen. So we have talked about the strategic impact, the economic impact, the impact to consumers from Africa to the United States. But the Houthi attacks have terrible humanitarian consequences for the people in Yemen, a country in crisis with enormous food insecurity in the proto-state that the Houthis have formed. The delivery of services has been extraordinarily poor. And there has been a ceasefire that was supported by the international community in the fall, with the possibility of significant resumption and increase of humanitarian aid to Yemen. But as these attacks are taking place and the Houthi leadership has discredited itself, it's likely to be put back on the U.S. Foreign Terrorist Organization mm-hmm. list.
Well, that
it
happened.
Means that the humanitarian aid will not come.
Really sad. And
It is back.
Yeah.
So, it is back on the list.
Yeah, it is. Actually, the announcement was made. So it's such a dicey situation. Just quickly, if we go back to Africa, Ms. Lorenzo, in terms of the entire security situation, if this war spreads, if the Israel-Hamas war ends up being an all-out Middle Eastern conflict, how does that impact the entire continent of Africa?
Sure. So if it does turn into a bigger conflict, eventually we're likely to actually see not just oil supply. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry.
We like cats. We like cats.
Listening. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're not just going to see the trade routes disrupted and a longer one found, but we might actually see oil production impacted. And when that happens, then the price of oil would then go up if supply is tighter. And then that inevitably will have an impact on food prices, fuel prices, fertilizer prices, which would really raise the cost of living across the world, but including Africa as well, where the cost of living and inflation have put significant pressure on standards of living really since the COVID-19 pandemic. And then that, of course, can exacerbate underlying tensions and security issues that are already in the region if mm-hmm. populations do get these wider frustrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a few minutes, maybe less than a minute. Mr. Ibish, in terms of the Houthis being put back on that list, what does that mean in terms of the ability to talk to them and to deal with them and Iran?
It makes it harder, but not impossible by any means. Certainly, the Saudis have an ongoing dialogue with the Houthis. Saudi Arabia is trying to get out of Yemen. This crisis could end up putting pressure on the Houthis. I think a lot of people are saying this benefits them. I agree with our colleague that this actually, in the long run, could put a lot of pressure on Houthis domestically. And in the end, that's what they care about. So I think there are long-term opportunities here.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate all of you. And that's where we will leave it for this week. Marissa Lorenzo, Van der Velbe, Brown, and Hussein Ibish, I want to thank you all for your time. Thanks to the more than 300 affiliate TV and radio stations across Africa that carry this show every week. From all of us here in Washington, thanks for always watching and always listening. Goodbye.